many people in France are remembering Louis Salvo warmly and see him as an inspiration.
The ashes of China's Nobel laureate scattered at sea. It's Monday, July 17th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us too online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Australian authorities want to bypass email encryption. Thailand deals with Uyghur refugees. An Afghan robotics team competing in the United States. Microbes within us and predicting climate from rocks. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The ashes of Chinese dissident and Nobel Peace laureate Liu Xiaobo were scattered at sea Saturday after a muted cremation ceremony that was under government watch in the Chinese city of Shenyang. Liu, China's best-known human rights prisoner, died Thursday at age 61 following a high-profile battle with liver cancer that made his death as controversial as his life. He spent his last 8 years as a prisoner of conscience and died at a hospital in Shenyang, where he had been moved from his prison cell in the final stage of his illness. Officials showed reporters a slideshow of photographs of the ceremony that was attended by his wife, Liu Xia, Liu's two brothers, and a brother of Liu's wife. Of the estimated 10 people in attendance, close friends of the couple did not appear to be among them in the government images. One picture showed Liu's widow wearing dark sunglasses and clutching a photograph of her late husband. Just hours after the ceremony, a government video showed Liu Xia and others lowering an urn into the water, depriving family and supporters of a physical location to pay their respects to China's only Nobel Peace Prize laureate. William Ni, China researcher for Amnesty International Hong Kong, spoke about Liu Xiaobo's legacy and China's imprisonment of him, along with the house arrest of his wife, with my colleague Sarah Williams.
Well, you know, I think the thing to remember is that this is China's Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and he died in prison. He should have never been there. And when he was given this, 11-year sentence at the time, it was absolutely outrageous. And I think that many people are just feel a sense of grief, of course, at his loss, but also outrage that he should have been in prison to begin with. And unfortunately, what we've seen over the last few years is that the trends towards human rights have only gotten worse, and that the government's space for civil society and for freedom of speech have been narrowing and narrowing, constricting, especially since Xi Jinping came to power. So, but at the same time, I think that many people in China, many people in civil society, are remembering Liu Xiaobo warmly and see him as an inspiration. Hopefully his legacy will live on.
Now, he didn't die in prison. He died in a hospital, and there had been calls for him to be sent, along with his wife and I believe his wife's brother, out of the country for treatment. And apparently that is what Liu wanted, but Chinese authorities did not allow that.
Yeah, I mean, Chinese authorities seemed to want to stage manage his death, quite frankly, and wanted to manage all information in and out of Liu Xiaobo's, or regarding Liu Xiaobo's health. Now, he did want his wife, a poet, Liu Xia, and her brother to go abroad. And I think that this will be a very crucial thing for the international community to focus on in the days and weeks ahead, is to allow her to go abroad. You know, she was under house arrest, for 7 years, literally for nothing, for only being the wife of Liu Xiaobo. So, all human beings have the human right to travel freely. This is an internationally recognized human right. And so Liu Xia has the right to go abroad if she so chooses. And this is one thing that Amnesty International will continue to press for as far as the Chinese government, to give her the real freedom to do what she wants.
William Ni, China researcher for Amnesty International Hong Kong. The leader of the Norwegian Nobel Committee said earlier this week the Chinese government bore a, quote, heavy responsibility for Liu's death. Barrett Rees-Anderson said in an emailed statement, the Chinese government bears a heavy responsibility for his premature death. China has lodged complaints against Germany, France, and the United States, as well as the United Nations Human Rights High Commissioner, over criticism about handling Liu's death. The ruling Communist Party newspaper said Liu lived a tragic life. The Global Times said Liu's last days were politicized by forces overseas. They used Liu's illness as a tool to boast their image and demonize China. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has also called for China to release Liu's widow from house arrest. Also on Saturday, China released a prominent rights activist from prison. Xu Qiyang was freed after serving a four-year sentence. His lawyer said Xu was in good health but offered no further details. He was convicted in 2014 for organizing an illegal gathering with the purpose of distributing a rather disturbing public order, a vague charge that activists say has been used to muzzle government critics. Xu was one of the founders of the New Citizens Movement, a loose network whose members held peaceful protests in Beijing and other cities, championing causes that were in line with the Communist Party's own stated goals. The idea that the New Citizens Movement is not to overthrow but to establish, Xu wrote in a 2010 essay, it's not one social class displacing another social class, but allowing righteousness to take its place in China. The New Citizens Movement inspired people across the country to gather for dinner parties to discuss social issues and occasionally to unfurl banners in public places and in small rallies. Supporters of Xu have wondered whether he will remain under close watch or house arrest, and some supporters reported on social media that they were barred by security guards and plainclothes officers from entering Xu's apartment compound on Saturday. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Australia urges freedom for Liu Xiaobo's widow. Australia and U.S. refugee swap again in doubt as officials exit Nauru. House fire in China claims at least 22. Abu Sayyaf suspected in Philippines abductions and jailbreak. Singaporeans call for abuse of power inquiry. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, try out our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Australia wants to pass new laws to force major tech companies to decode encrypted messages and hand them over to crime fighters. The government in Canberra says the measures are needed to fight extremism, drug smuggling, and child abuse. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports technology experts say it's difficult to see how the legislation would work in practice.
The cybersecurity law would compel international technology giants such as Google, Apple, and Facebook to help law enforcement agencies by helping to decode encrypted messages sent by suspected extremists and other criminals. The proposed legislation would be modelled on Britain's Investigatory Powers Act, which has given UK intelligence agencies some of the most broad-ranging surveillance powers in the Western world. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull wants Australia to have the same capabilities.
Increasingly, communications across the internet, whether it's messaging applications or voice applications, are encrypted end to end. And that means that while they can be intercepted, they can't be read. So what we're seeking to do, working with the other leading economies in the world, is to ensure that the brilliant tech companies in Silicon Valley and their emulators bring their brilliance to bear to assist the rule of law.
The Australian Federal Police say the legislation wouldn't change or expand what the authorities could currently legally intercept, but would give them the ability to see material that's scrambled by encryption applications. The Turnbull administration is expecting resistance from some tech companies, including many based in the United States. Apple boss Tim Cook has previously rejected cooperation with governments that could undermine the security of its products. Professor Nigel Fair, director of the Centre for Internet Safety at the University of Canberra, says the Australian plan is fraught with problems.
There's no silver bullet to catching these people, and as soon as we create or try to create a backdoor on one messaging app, they're just going to create their own messaging app, which won't cooperate with government. So there's other players out there that won't cooperate with government. They might be domiciled in a foreign jurisdiction that doesn't abide by the way we play. And, of course, the criminals will just use that app.
Australian authorities say that 65% of their investigations into serious crime, including terrorism and paedophile rings, involve some sort of encryption. Ministers hope to introduce the laws in Parliament in the next few months. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, China released prominent rights activist Chu Chiyang from prison after serving a 4-year sentence. His lawyer said Chu was in good health but offered no further details. Chu was one of the founders of the New Citizens Movement, a loose network whose members held peaceful protests in Beijing and other cities. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. Thailand is facing a renewed dilemma over the fate of more than 60 ethnic Uyghur asylum seekers amid reports of pressure by China for the group's return. The 62 men and women held in detention centers represent the last of more than 350 Uyghurs found by authorities in southern Thailand in 2014. They were seeking to travel to Turkey. Thailand is a key destination for ethnic Uyghurs, a predominantly Muslim Turkic minority originating in western China's Xinjiang province. Human rights groups say unrest in Xinjiang in recent years was followed by a Chinese central government crackdown against the Muslim community. Rights groups accuse Beijing of ethnic discrimination and what they call severe religious repression and increasing cultural suppression. Beijing accuses the Uyghur community of having links with separatists and terrorist organizations such as Islamic State. In July 2015, Thailand allowed 172 Uyghur men, women, and children to travel to Turkey. But Thailand faced international condemnation after it deported 109 Uyghurs, mostly men, to China. In August 2015, a bomb blast at a shrine in central Bangkok, which was popular with visiting ethnic Chinese, left 20 people dead and dozens injured. A second bomb plot targeting a restaurant catering to Chinese tourists failed to go ahead. Reports said the attack's masterminds had fled the country, and analysts like Thitinen Pongsudhirak, a political scientist at Chulalongkorn University, say the bombing has also led to divisions within the government.
It also plays into the domestic Thai politics about who's in charge and about the dynamics of the people in charge. Deputy Prime Minister, Defense Minister Prawit Wongsuwan appears more pleasing to the Chinese, whereas maybe the PM Prayut is a little bit more detached or impartial.
In May 2016, Uyghurs held in Thai detention went on a hunger strike, saying that they feared for their safety if they returned to China. Panattan Wattanayagorn, an advisor to the deputy prime minister, said a final decision on the Uyghur detainees and other groups is still pending.
The situation is still the National Security Council, in particular, still evaluating the possibilities of sending back different groups, including Uyghur, to the origin countries or the third party country. They're in the process, of evaluating, but no major decision has been made yet. So it means that they're on hold. And this is not for Uyghurs alone, but for all groups.
Thailand is also evaluating its access to assess the Uyghurs once they're back in China. But rights groups say major concerns remain over the well-being of the ethnic minorities. Thitinen said the combination of fears and another terrorist attack if the Uyghurs are transported to China, combined with Thailand's improving international diplomatic ties, including with the United States, may ease the pressure from China.
So perhaps this is a big difference compared to 2 or 3 years ago. China is not the only game in town. If the Western countries show some movement, then that could lead to some leverage for the military government to deal with China, so that Thailand is not fully beholden to Chinese preferences.
U.S.-based Human Rights Watch Asia Director Brad Adams, in emailed comments, said no Uyghurs be returned to China because of the threat of them disappearing, quote, into the maw of a non-transparent, non-accountable prison system where they are liable to be tortured and worse. Our thanks to Ron Corbin in Bangkok for contributing this story. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news alert from VOA Asia. Pakistan's military launched a major ground offensive Sunday to clear an isolated, militant-infested border valley that Islamic State loyalists are using to export terrorism into the country from its bases in neighboring Afghanistan. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. You may recall earlier this month a story about the U.S. Embassy in Kabul denying visas for unknown reasons to allow Afghanistan's all-girl robotics team visas to participate in international competition here in the United States. The annual three-day robotics competition kicked off earlier Sunday here in Washington, and the young Afghan girls are present. President Donald Trump is said to have personally intervened to allow them into the country. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reported Wednesday that Trump granted the girls what is known as a parole, reversing the earlier decision to bar them from the United States that will allow them to come to Washington for 20 days. Upon their arrival at Dulles International Airport just outside of Washington, Afghan Ambassador to the United States Hamdullah Mohib praised the girls as the future of his country.
They are an embodiment of what our present and our future looks like. Their resilience is what we are we're excited about. They're here representing the dreams of all of Afghanistan.
A student team from Gambia was also granted visas last week after initially being rejected. The president of First Global, which organized the robotics competition, is former Democratic congressman and retired U.S. Navy Admiral Joe Sestak. He thanked the White House and the State Department for clearing obstacles to the Afghan and Gambian students' travel to the U.S. Teams from all 157 countries that have entered the competition are taking part. 15-year-old Afghan team member Lida Azizi is excited to have the chance to compete.
Afghanistan is a war-torn country which is difficult for women to improve. But now this is a big chance for us to take part in this competition, and also it's really good for our country too.
First Global Challenge holds the yearly contest to build up interest in science, technology, engineering, and math across the world. The group says the focus is the competition, finding solutions to problems in such fields as water, energy, medicine, and food production.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Developing at this hour in Asia, the world's reigning and emerging superpowers are close in popularity, according to a new report on China's global image. Nearly 42,000 people across 38 countries polled by the Washington-based Pew Research Center say 49% held a favorable view of the United States, compared to 47% for China. Visit the popular VOA Asia Facebook page every day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Charles Darwin's theory of evolution says humans evolved as separate species. But modern science knows that we, together with all other creatures, have always lived in a symbiosis with a great number of microbes dwelling inside and outside of our bodies, the so-called holobiont. The VOA's George Pudich spoke with a scientist who said that the fact that we evolved together calls for a revision of Darwin's views.
The hologenome theory is a new way of looking at evolution that extends beyond Darwin. The theory appeared at the beginning of the 21st century when researchers proved that a healthy human body has trillions of bacteria collectively known as human microbiota. Microbes appeared on the Earth much sooner than humans, and the new theory concludes that we all evolved in symbiosis with each other.
It means that instead of it being simply intense competition and natural selection that gets us to be what we are, it's actually about collaboration between microbes and ourselves. It's always about cells, cells that have purpose, And together, they engineer the kind of organisms that we are.
William Miller, physician with 30-year private practice and the author of a new book, The Microcosm Within, says scientists recently discovered that their own cells and microbes are in a way very intelligent. Miller spoke to VOA via Skype.
Microbes and our own cells are problem-solving agencies. And that makes the entire difference. So my point is, we have alien life, life inside us, on us, intimately associated with us, makes us what we are, that is so entirely different from us that we have no idea how to communicate with it.
Miller says we are at the very initial threshold of understanding how human microbiota affect our metabolism, our immune system, even our moods.
When we explore these, when we get to understand them, many of our chronic human diseases will be made much better or avoided. Our lives may be lengthened, but certainly the quality of our lives will be improved when we learn how to communicate better.
Microbes communicate through exchange of complex molecules, but also with light, sounds, maybe even through a physical phenomenon called quantum entanglement, by which the state of a particle cannot be described without the state of its pair, even when they are very distant from each other.
Experiments show that there's a very high likelihood that somehow microbes have learned how to harness this in their own communication, and we don't know how.
Miller says learning how to communicate with microbes may also help in our search for extraterrestrial life, as it is highly probable that it will also be on a microbial level. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Two stalagmites collected from a cave in Iran recorded the changing climate over 128,000 years. Faith Lapidus tells us in this report written by Faiza El-Masri that analyzing their chemical composition led researchers to conclude that relief from the region's current dry spell isn't likely within the next 10,000 years.
As they slowly drip onto cave floors, the mineral-laden drops of water that form stalagmites create an archive of the changing climate outside the cave. These stalagmites, from Ali Kurd, a cave in north-central Iran, contain a record of precipitation in the Middle East from 70,000 to 130,000 years ago. Researchers at the University of Miami Rosenstiel School took samples from different points along the stalagmites and analyzed the oxygen isotopes. That helped them reconstruct the history of rainfall in the region over time. Cycles of wet and dry periods corresponded to the Earth's angle to the sun and the amount of solar energy it received. Savag Matarian spoke to us via Skype.
So as the Earth moved closer and further away from the sun in thousands of year time periods, it would receive more energy, and this energy would actually be able to evaporate water in the Mediterranean Sea, and then it's that water that would eventually feed into the region of the Middle East as rainfall. And so we saw precisely this kind of record in the stalagmites that we measured.
This pattern, from maximum solar energy to today's minimum and back, repeated roughly every 20,000 years and was a worldwide phenomenon.
We actually compared directly our own findings with that of the North Greenland Ice Core Project, which is one of the very famous ice cores from Greenland, as well as a deep sea sediment record from the Atlantic, which looked at little microorganisms that lived in the sediment and also looked at, again, the same kind of oxygen isotopes in there. And what we found was that we see the same exact record recorded in all of these different mediums in vastly different regions of the world.
And while it might seem that more solar energy would create a warmer, wetter world, Matarian explains there's a difference between energy from outside the planet and heat-trapping gases from the surface.
It's a different mechanism of heating that's not able to actually warm up any of the water enough to evaporate it in a way to actually cause beneficial precipitation to the region.
The research, published in Quaternary Science Reviews, predicts a dry spell likely to continue for the next 10,000 years. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and we thank you so much for joining us today, whether you've been listening to us from a download, iTunes or SoundCloud, or through VOA Asia Facebook. We thank, too, our director Tracy Carter and engineer Ida Nutku, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a great day.